I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. John, KC2 WGB, and Dick, K2RIW. Try to organize this thing called the TechNet, and we gather most Sunday evenings and try to tap into that brain power that we think exists, that we know exists in the New York City, New Jersey, Connecticut area, Long Island area, to entertain a little bit, to educate a whole lot, we hope, as to the 25 or 26 different kinds of ham radio. How do we make all this hardware work, and how do we get a little bit more enjoyment out of it? What are the other kinds of ham radio like? A person signs into the technical net by giving John and Dick your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign-in might be KA2PUX, Charles, and yes. Charles did sign in last week, and I skipped over him. We didn't get to him, so if he signs in this week, he goes to the top of the list. Anyone to check in right now? Give me your call letters and name. K2RIW.
Oh, yes.
Okay, that was a quadruple, but I did hear John, who had a piece of information. Go ahead, John.
Dick, Lou, NY2H recommends that we leave approximately twice the length of the four tones as a space because of some problems with the IRLP, and they would appreciate that. It will help.
Very fine, John. Okay, we'll do that. All right, now those people who are trying to check in, try one more time, see if you can do it one at a time. K2RIW. That was a perfect quadruple. Nobody came through. I think I'm hearing Rich N2EO in there. Is that true, Rich?
Roger, Dick. I got a question.
Tango, tango, tango.
KD2BHY, yes.
Okay, we've got VMP, yes.
This is KC2TGG, located in Brooklyn, New York. And here is Joe.
KC2THY, yes.
Yeah, we got you, Jim. We got Rich, Jim, Joe, KC2. Is that Tango Zulu Golf? Is that your call letters, Joe?
Yes, there is. And I believe there's Rich out there also that's trying to get in there. He's a little staticky on my end.
When you say Rich, I wonder if that's Rich N2EO. He already made it. Whiskey 2, Tango, Tango, Tango. Are you signing in with a question, sir? And are you mobile? Tango, 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 go ahead.
Yeah, Dick, it's Gordon here, W2TTT. I just had a quick announcement that we're going to have a indoor ham fest and flea market, if you will, the Saturday after Easter, which I think is April 10th. In Bergenfield, and it's on the AWRL website, and the kitchen will be greatly improved over last time. Just want to, it's to benefit our Boy Scout troop and our venture crew, which is very much ham radio oriented. So I just thought I'd mention it since I had a little spot at the top, and I am mobile. And it's Gordon here, and how are you?
Very fine, Gordon. So Hamfest on April 10th in Bergenfield, and are you also signing
with AY? Doug, yes.
We heard Doug, W2SAY. Are you also saying, Gordon, that you want to go on the list for a question?
Perhaps later, Dick. There's a lot of guys with questions tonight, so I think I'll behave.
N2XN with a question.
And WS2N with the space report. Paul, good evening.
Okay, so far we've got Rich, Jim, Joe, Doug, and Wesley. Have I missed anyone? K2RIW listening.
Paul.
Yeah, we got you, Paul. I know you got a space report. Anyone else? Okay, and as I said before, if Charles signs in, because we passed over him by mistake last week, KA2 Pumper Uniform X-Ray, if he signs in, we're going to put him on the list. First person with a question was Rich, N2EO. What's happening in Whitestone? Rich, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Jim, James is second. Why don't you change it around? Because Jim has school tomorrow. He's 11 years old. I think he has questions to ask you about the ICO 753 I gave him today. So why don't you let him go first, and I'll go second, Dick. Good deal?
Roger, Dodger. Let me wait. Okay, Jim, I think I've heard tell that you've picked up an antenna and a piece of equipment today, so it looks like you're off and running, or at least you've got the rare equipment to start setting up and running. KD2BHY, K2RIW. Go right ahead, Jim.
Okay, thanks, Dick. Yeah, I got the ICO and the power supply and the antenna, but I need can you give me the name of the connector that connects the antenna to the transmitter, because I have an ICO 753, but I can't remember the brand of the antenna. There's a connector that I need, and if you give me the name, I'll just run to Radio Shack and pick it up.
Yeah, I think the antenna you've got is a G5RV Junior, I believe, is what was being offered to you last week. And the connector on most transmitters of that age, of the ICO 753 period, was a PL-259. PL-259 is the male pin connector that goes on the end of the cable, and the connector that's on the chassis itself is called SO-239, I think it is, but you're not going to buy the connector that's on the chassis, the female connector. It's the male connector that you put on the end of the cable, PL-259. That's a Radio Shack product in the bubble packs, and depending on what diameter cable is on your G5RV, I'm going to pass it over to Rich for a couple of comments on all of this, depending on what kind of cable. If it's the fat cable, RG8, then there's one style of PL-259. And if it's a smaller diameter cable, RG58, the one that's about a quarter inch diameter, then there's a slightly different style of PL-259. For PL-259, the end that plugs into the back of the rig, that's always the same. But the back end of the connector where the cable plugs in, there's two different diameters, the large and the small diameter version. And when it comes to properly there, let's see what, I guess it's PL-259. You might correct me on that because it was your transmitter, Rich. N2EO for some information, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, yes, it does take a PL-259. You can buy one at Radio Shack, like you say. I don't know. I didn't look at the antenna. Maybe JD is in there because he brought the antenna over, rolled up in a bag. So I really didn't look at it. He would need. I guess it's probably RG58. I wouldn't swear to it. He would need a reducer rate to that. I'll just say if he picks up the connector and he wants to stop by here with his father next week. If he has a problem, I'll put it on for him. It's not a problem. And if that doesn't work out, I have crimp connectors here, Dick. Good crimp connectors. I'm using them now for 2 years on 6-2, 432, and 1296. They're outdoors, and I've had zero problems with them. Yeah, Dick.
Okay, so I was correct in guessing that the rig, the ICO, has a connector on the back that accepts the PL-259. I now realize I'm wrong when I said there's two different flavors of PL-259. The PL-259 connector is only one size that's popular, and that's made for the RG8 cable. That's the cable that's almost a half inch in diameter, the large diameter cable. Your antenna most likely has the quarter inch diameter cable, the RG58 type cable, and that cable takes this reducer. So when you buy the reducing adapter made for the back end of the 259, PL-259, you properly trim the cable, you put this reducer over the end of the cable, you fold over the braid over the end of the reducer, and then all of that screws into the back of the PL-259. So there's only one kind of PL-259. You're going to be buying it, and you're going to be buying the reducer. And
Dick, I don't think James got the coax with the antenna. I'm pretty sure he didn't.
In other words, you believe he has the bare antenna without the coax cable, and I think you're saying he's going to have to supply the coax cable. Give us a couple of words on that, Rich. Here we go. Barry, N2 Moonbounce, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, because I was actually at JD's house. I put a different antenna up in, and I think he was having trouble with his coax, so I don't believe he gave James the coax. So I think what James might want to do is probably Radio Shack, unless somebody has the coax. I don't have any that I think is reliable enough to give him. I'll look. If I have some good coax, I'll gladly donate it to him. But he would probably need like 100 feet or something of RG-58, you know, one of those cables with the connector, you know, which is not too expensive at Radio Shack.
So if the cable is not there with the antenna, and the antenna itself has usually in one version there's some 300 ohm twin lead as part of the antenna, and there's the wire that goes over to the insulator that gets strung into the tree, and then coax cable comes from the twin lead down into the shack, is the way some of the G5RV antennas are set up. Whether or not the G5RV Junior is like that, I'm not quite sure. And when it comes to buying the RG58 cable or getting the RG58 cable, it might come with a connector on the end of it. The most popular connector for the end of that cable is a BNC connector. That's the one that's a bayonet type of connector. And so there's something to be said, and let me think now, to get from that to the PL259 connector is a little bit of a problem. I don't know of a simple adapter there. You might be ending up removing the connector.
Radio Shack has the 58 with the PL259 jumpstick.
So in other words, there is a version of the... Let me drop... So I think you're saying, John, there is a version of the PL259 connector where the front end is the normal male pin on the PL259 with the threaded barrel on it. And I think you're saying the back end is a, quite possibly a female BNC is one of the versions that will then take the BNC connector on the end of the cable, the RG58 cable, and just simply plug them together. So I'm not familiar with that one, and give us a couple of words on that one, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the tech net.
KC2WGB. No, Dick, they have 50-foot lengths of RG58 with the PL259 on it, and the reducer's already there. It's already made up. They do have those in blister packs. 100-foot, you might have to order that. But if you get away with 50, that they haven't stopped.
And, okay, so that's a good point. So he can buy RG58 cable with the PL259 connector already connected on at least one end. So it's not a BNC adapter. I should have realized that. Okay, and that'll make life a lot easier. And I don't think he has a very long distance to go. I suspect that a 50-foot length would more than do it. And so if you don't already have that cable, Jim, as you can tell, there's various ways you can get a hold of the right kind of cable that'll go to the antenna and have the PL259 connector on the end that goes directly to the transmitter. I think Doug wants to give us some information on this. Doug, were you calling us on this subject? WA2SAY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Hey,
are you hearing me over this stuff?
Yeah, I'm hearing you, and I was hearing everything Doug said by way of listening to him directly on the Eastern repeater. And Doug was suggesting that Jim consider buying the Radio Shack RG58 cable by way of their internet connection. In other words, over the internet, by ordering it, just in case the particular store he goes to doesn't have it. So there's many options there. So Jim, I wonder if you've made a guess yet as to whether or not the cable is already there, the coax cable going to the antenna. And if not, you've heard some of the options on doing that. And when it comes to the right kind of connector, the right kind of cable, and getting this all together, it's going to be a little bit complicated at first. Don't worry, you'll eventually get this all straightened out, Jim. KD2BHY, KQRIW in the TechNet.
Okay, I'm just gonna go on to the internet and see if I can find one, and I'll definitely buy it. Thanks, Dick. I'll be listening.
Dick, go to RadioShack.com, and it's right there.
So RadioShack.com, and I think you're saying they have various lengths of RG58 type cable, and one of those options has the PL259 connector already on at least one end. Is that what you're saying, Rich?
They might also hit them for about $10 for shipping. So if you get it locally, that's a better deal.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. Bill also recognized. So it looks like you can get it over the internet, but the $10 shipping, if that's true, could be a little bit of a pain. Bill, QGZ, go right ahead, K2RIW.
Hey, good evening. Real quick, if you go up on the Radio Shack website, you can check stock in your local stores. And obviously that's a, you know, plus or minus a couple, because it doesn't instantly update, but you can get a pretty good idea whether it's in stock at your local store from the website. If it says they have three, it's probably a safe bet they have one. Okay.
W2BMP.
W2BMP recognized. And that's a very good suggestion, Bill. So it looks like when you go to the website, not necessarily to buy it, Jim, but there's a way you can find out which stores have it. And within reasonable range of where you live, Great Neck, I think it is, there's probably two or three different Radio Shacks. You could find out which one has it in stock, and that'll make life a lot easier to just simply go there, not pay the $10 shipping, and then buy it directly. W2BMP, sign up with your name and your suggestion on this subject, sir. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Hi, Dick. We've spoken before, and actually this comment was with James. I think the Radio Shack part number that he wants is 278-967. It's PL259 and 50 foot of cable.
Okay, very fine, Joe. And that's good information. So,
repeater, time out. Repeater, time out. Cancel.
Okay, during that timeout, Barry said that he's going to look and see if he's got it. So we found out from Bill that when you go to the Radio Shack website, you can find out what products they've got in which stores, and quite possibly Barry already has a piece of cable, and he's going to find out. If he does, he's going to find out from Rich into EO the easiest way to get it to you, Jim. So one way or another, you're going to have cable, antenna, transmitter, and although it's a slightly older transmitter with tubes, not to worry. They're very forgiving as far as you won't need an antenna tuner. The older rigs that had a real tuning and loading control could tolerate all kinds of slightly high standing wave ratio of the antenna. There's a little bit of a learning curve also on the how to properly set the tuning and loading control, how to properly tune up the rig, but you'll be learning that pretty soon. Over to you, Jim, for any other comments. KD2BHY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
All right, thanks. Barry, it's okay. You don't have to give it to me. I'll just run to Radio Shack and buy it. It would be much simpler. That's about it.
Already. The next person on the list was Rich, N2EO. Go right ahead, Rich, K2RIW.
Okay, Dick, am I getting over that okay?
You're loud and clear.
Okay, Dick, N2EO. Got a question. It's something I visited last year to finish up on it. I was thinking of computerizing the antenna system that Barry put up for me a couple of years ago. I've got a ham... it's a ham 4 rotator. And there's a company in upstate New York making a computerized, actually it's a digital control box with a computer interface. The name of the company is Green Heron, H-E-R-O-N. Also, Hygain makes a digital box. Thing is, I'm wondering if anybody knows of software pointed more at VHF, UHF, and microwave for instance, there's software around that, you know, will go run down the DXCC list and point an antenna at a particular prefix on the globe. That's not what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for, Dick, actually, I'm not actually sure exactly what I'm looking for, but for starters, let's say I didn't know where you were, K2RIW. I want to have something with a database or access to database so it can point right at your grid square without me having to look up where K2RIW lives and do it manually. Also, I'd like to be able to point to a particular grid square, FM30, FM31, whatever. And that's just for starters. I'm probably thinking more things later, but does anybody know of it?
Repeater, time out. Repeater, time out. Cancel.
All right, did you copy me on the input deck, or were you listening?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, that noise peaks up at 340 degrees from me. That's almost north of me.
Okay, it's good to know, Barry. Yes, Rich, we did copy everything you said, which was that, all of a sudden I've forgotten the subject matter.
Software for his rotor.
Yeah, it's a good thing you reminded me. I'm getting old. Now, there's two different questions you could be asking with reference to software. Number one, if by way of QRZ.com, where you look up each individual guy's call letters, QRZ.com will tell you the guy's latitude and longitude, and his grid square, but it'll also tell you his latitude and longitude. So there's one piece of software which you can get from ARRL headquarters, which I think is supplied free of charge. I've forgotten the name of it, but somebody's going to tell me, where you plug in your Latin long, you plug in the Latin long of the guy you want to talk to, and it tells you the beam heading, the bearing and distance in both miles and kilometers, and beam heading in true degrees from north. So there's a program that does that. There's also a set of programs that a lot of the AMSAT guys are using, Amateur Satellite Corporation. If you go to their website, they've got a number of programs that tell you how to automatically aim the antenna as far as a satellite going over is concerned. And what some of those guys doing is they set up a computer program into their HAM-4 with some other hardware interfacing, software, firmware, whatever, which allows them to remotely control, digitally control. I don't think you're looking for that. I think you're willing to manually control your HAM-4 as long as you know the right bearing. And I think it's called BD, bearing and distance. I think the program is called BD, and I think ARRL's got it. Let me pass it back to you, Rich. Drag your feet a little bit in case anyone wants to correct me on that. N2EO, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. Yeah, what I said is I want to control...
Repeater, time out.
So what Rich was telling us is about the Green Heron Company, which has this piece of software that does that function of programming and I presume it's got memories to it. In other words, you tell it all of your favorite people, each one of those call letters, you tell it where they're located, and therefore it goes to that particular bearing. But I think the beginning of your process is to get a hold of that BD program from ARRL, among other places you can get it. Once you now know that it's called BD, which stands for bearing and distance, I'm sure there's a number of websites as well as ARRL that can supply that for you free of charge. And that allows you to convert Latin long into bearing and distance. I don't think you really need completely automatic control of the rotator. In other words, if you knew that K2RIW is at 98 degrees from you, to manually adjust your HAM-4 to steer it to 98 degrees, I think would not be a problem. Is that true, Rich? K2RIW?
That's true, Dick. It's something I don't have to have, but I thought it'll be handy when the bands open up in the summer and I don't have to do a manual hookup. I can aim right at somebody, especially Chopo on 1296, like a 35 element up there, and the beam width is kind of tight. The Screen Heron Company is not software, it's a control box, digital control box that can be wired up for ham four among other rotators, but it has a computer interface to go to a computer.
Update that to 340 box repeater.
Time out. Repeater. Time out.
So on the input, I heard Barry say 345 degrees was the bearing he was getting from Far Rockaway. 345 is, that's almost due north.
Team 6 to Bernie, I don't know your number. Team 1, all right. You have the ARCOM controller software on your laptop with you?
Charles, let's see if I can hear you on the input. Kilo Alpha 2, wait a minute, no, it's not Charles, sorry about that. It's Joe. Kilo Charlie 2 Tango, Charlie Golf, I think it is. Joe, give me a brief transmission. Let's see how well I can copy you on the input. KC2 TG, TCG, K2LIW listening.
Oh, that's the woman.
which is a piece of sheet metal. It's a stepped piece of sheet metal coming down the center of the horn that does create linear polarization launched by one of those probes into circular polarization. There are other designs for horns where the septum is a piece of plastic as a polarizer. So there's two different designs. Usually the piece of plastic as a polarizer is used in a round horn. It's only the square horn that has this piece of sheet metal as a septum. And as you probably know, if you're seeing, I know you're seeing the microwave reflector. Let me drop. Amplitude and 45 degrees, correction, 90 degrees, the difference between the two, very, very difficult. I'm amazed that somebody hasn't recognized that with the patching, you'd be better off having a completely square patch, equal resonant frequency, horizontal and vertical, two separate probes, a horizontal and vertical probe, and feed them with a quadrature hybrid, a 3 dB coupler. And that guarantees you're going to have very clean circular polarization, extremely good bandwidth, because when you feed two identical antennas, the horizontal and vertical are identical, with a quadrature hybrid, it's like feeding a balanced amplifier. You end up with extremely good standing wave ratio, with a very wide bandwidth, whereas the way they're doing it is the hard way. So once you study those horn antennas to give you circular polarization, I think you'll find out the rectangular one, which is now the most popular, it is a metallic septum. W2SAY, K2LIW.
And then SLUA2SAY. Okay, Dick. Well, I think you've answered the main question, or the question as to what the septum is made out of. I thought it was made out of metal. I was looking at the GHC site. He's got a big long paper on circular polarization. Basically on the rectangular or square, actually square horn, and a mention of the circular waveguide thing also. I wonder if you could give me a few words as to how the septum can generate this circular polarization, or is that too complicated for the net? WA2SAY, back to you.
It looks like we're back in normal operation, so I'll tell you this way first. The way you generate circular polarization is you have a horizontal source of signal, horizontal polarized source of signal, usually out of a horn, and a vertical source of signal. If you make those two sources of signal equal in amplitude, but if you make one of them 90 degrees delayed in phase or time, call it quarter wavelength delayed in time if you like, or 90 degrees in phase, then you're generating circular polarization. Let me give you a little example as to what's going on. Assume now that my vertical polarization is up and down, and the probe launches a signal at so-called 12 o'clock on the polarization circle. You're standing behind the horn. You're looking forward out of the in the direction that propagates, and the vertical probe launches a signal at 12 o'clock. And your horizontal probe, the second probe in the horn, launches a signal at 3 o'clock. And if you delay the 3 o'clock, the signal that goes to the horizontal probe, if you delay it by a quarter wavelength in time, distance, or 90 degrees in phase, however you want to look at it, it's very similar to what happens when you're drawing lizardry patterns onto an oscilloscope. When you do that, if you start off with the main signal at 12 o'clock, and then the delayed signal arrives at 3 o'clock, so as the signal at 12 o'clock goes to its peak and it's going back down towards zero, and the signal at 3 o'clock, the delayed one, is coming up to its peak, it's very similar to sweeping the dial, the main large hand on the clock, from 12 o'clock toward 3 o'clock. It's very similar to doing that. And so, as you can see, standing behind the horn, if the instantaneous polarization sweeps from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock, by the IEEE standards, that's called clockwise circular polarization, and it's related to the way you transmit into that horn. So, doing it with two separate probes, you can see how you generate circular polarization. When you do it with a septum, it turns out the septum is leaking some signal from horizontal polarization to vertical polarization. If that septum and the sawtooth teeth on the darn thing is leaking from signal from one to the other, and it leaks just the right amount of signal, a half amplitude, if you know what I mean, and it delays it in time. And septum, when you got the septum, the metal septum, just the right shape, it's doing that. It's acting like that second probe in the horn. I know that's not the whole story, but it helps a little bit. W2SAY, I'll be listening to you on 975-375, K2RIW. Go ahead, Doug.
John, go ahead.
Yes, I
I can hear you fine. Okay, I just wanted to make sure. And we need the delay.
Roger, Dodger. One more call for Paul. WS2N, K2RW, there, Paul. What was that, Barry?
The call was just great on the end. Transmitting over this stuff.
For the time being, coming through so well, Paul, to the mailbag. So go ahead with question number one, Paul. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
KC2WGB. You're still copying me, right, Dick?
Out and clear. Out and clear.
Okay. I have Bob from Tompkins Cove, New York. Wow. He hears us on a scanner up there, and he has a question concerning radar. So put your radar hat on. let me leg drop. I guess not. This question has to do with resolution, and it has to do with air-to-air radar and ground-to-air. He would like to know, from air-to-air radar, what is the, at 50 miles, what is the minimum size object they can detect, if you know that, and then compare that to ground station radar at 50 miles? And what determines the resolution as far as detecting almost exactly what they're looking at? This is like the shape of the craft, whether it's a large aircraft, like a bridge. And where it's used. Back to you, Dick. KC2WGB.
Van Wyk Expressway.
of radar, John. If you open up the book by Skolnick, S-K-O-L-N-I-K or N-I-C, I think it is, called Introduction to Radar, and there's also another book called Skolnick Radar Handbook. These are classic books that give you a lot of information on the subject. Let me drop for a second.
Making a circle right now, making a circle right now towards me. Probably moving BQU right now, BQU right now towards your location, and making a BQ, no, it's a...
When you open up those two books that I mentioned, Skolnick's Radar Handbook and Skolnick's Introduction to Radar, the size of the echo you get off the target is measured in something called radar cross-section. Let me stand by. Target is called radar cross-section, measured in square meters, but you got to be careful about the word square meters. Without a doubt, a bomber airplane is going to give you a much bigger echo than a fighter airplane. It's got more square meters. And the way they rate the square meters is to put the object in question, whether it be a fighter plane or a stealthy airplane or a bomber, they put it on a special kind of an antenna range, called a reflectivity antenna range, you could call it, or an RCS range. They have one out in the Midwest. And they measure how much echo they get from the so-called instrumentation radar. They've got a standard radar with a known amount of gain of its antenna, a known amount of power of its transmitter, a known amount of sensitivity of its receiver, and you measure literally the signal you get back from that particular target. You then substitute for the target a metal sphere, a completely round conducting metal sphere.
I'm gonna be careful, you don't wanna see.